Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift.
Hello and welcome to episode 164 of Pixel Sift, the show dedicated to indie games from Australia and around the world. My name's Fiona, and joining me tonight is my co-host Mitch. Hey, thanks for joining me.
Hello. It's good to be back on an episode with another presenter.
It has been a little while, hasn't it? And our guest tonight is Ezra Artman, director of Bad Goat Studios. Thanks for joining us tonight, Ezra.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we'll be talking to Ezra about his new game, Henry Moss and the Wormhole Conspiracy, a point-and-click puzzle adventure game.
So, all right, let's get into it.
Hey there, if you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
So our guest this evening is Ezra Artman, who is the director at Bad Goat Studios, but the studio behind Henry Moss and the Wormhole Conspiracy. Now, just for people who may not know Ezra, could you tell us what Henry Moss and the Wormhole Conspiracy is?
Henry Moss is a 2D coming-of-age adventure game that is about a space boy, Henry, and his adventures through space with his mum, Saren, and they journey to defeat cosmic evil and save the family business.
So what was the main inspiration behind making this game?
The main inspiration? The game, it was always intended to be a point-and-click adventure, and it was heavily influenced by those sort of classic graphic adventures in the 90s, LucasArts games, the Sierra games that we all love. That was, I guess, a big inspiration. And we, of course, wanted to bring a modern sort of flavor and twist and integrate some newer features and elements to the game as well.
So what drew you and the team to deciding to make it a point-and-click adventure game as opposed to another style?
It's something that I've always sort of personally been attached to. I grew up with these games. I'm fond of them. I know that there are others that are the same and you know, they love the genre. And, there are some pros, there are some cons to the genre itself. But just focusing on some of the pros, like just the accessibility, I think, to this style of game is a big plus. And, I mean, it's all about the story. It's all about the characters. And that's where it sort of, you know, that was the main driver for the game. And just to make it as accessible as possible to a family audience was sort of key. And so it sort of fit well, this genre fit well with the story that we were trying to tell.
You've written a pretty family-oriented story set in the science fiction universe. We don't actually see a lot of family accompany characters in video games at all. Why did you feel important to tell this kind of story?
Well, I think for that very reason, that we don't see it very often. And it's something that I think should be shown more. in a lot of these, especially family games, there are absent parents, and you know, I'm sure there are various reasons for that. That in every Disney film, that there are no parents around, especially a coming of age story, which most of them tend to be. But I think there is a space for parents to be a part of that coming of age journey, for that teen, you know, for that adolescent character. And in particular, with this game, you know, it's not a traditional family. It's, I guess, for the sake of a better word, a modern family as well. So, and that is certainly lacking representation in.
So you were saying that the game is more for a family audience. Was there a specific age that a range that you had in mind while creating the game?
That's a good question. That we sort of had two audiences in mind when making the game. One was people who grew up with these sorts of games and, you know, and love the genre, like I said before, and they're typically older, an older audience. And the interesting thing that we found, especially when we exhibited at PAX and saw you last time, Mitch, was that we saw a lot of people who love point-and-click games and love the genre. And a lot of them they came along with their kids, the sort of young kids, I don't know, 8 to 12-year-olds, I don't know. It was obviously varied. And they really enjoyed playing the games with their kids and getting them involved in it. And it was really nice to see intersection or that sort of bonding experience over a game.
The game is fully voice acted, and that's really awesome. What was the process like finding the right people for these characters?
We weren't always certain that we would be able to have full voice acting just in terms of resources and funding. So the script and the story and the characters were all written and fleshed out and drawn and animated before we brought voice actors on board. And then through support like from Film Victoria and just through the development, we made the decision to go with full voice acting and believed that it would just it would add so much more to the story and to the characters, and it did, and all of the voice actors bring so much life to the characters. Yeah, so it was certainly happy with that decision. In terms of the process of finding voice actors, there are a few Australian characters. Henry, for one, is an Australian character, and so we just obviously we went local and saw some local awesome talent in Australia, and for various other characters we used platforms like voice acting platforms and found great people who just worked really well. And it was great that we already had, you know, really fleshed out visuals and dialogue ready for them, because it was just easy to see who fit the part. Yeah.
So you said that fully voice acted, the game being fully voice acted, was not the original intention. When in the development process did you decide that, yes, this is what we want to do?
Well, we always wanted it. I guess we decided that this is what we are going to do once we got the support, probably, from Film Victoria, and, you know, made it a possibility.
Now, another thing about the game which sticks out very much in a really lovely way is the art style. And the colour and the lightning, it reminds me about what you would see in graphic novels at some point. Could you tell us a bit more about the art style?
Yeah, it sort of evolved over time with the artists. They explored different styles, you know, looking at other games, looking at other references. There was a lot of sort of retro art. I know the Jetsons was sort of a really sort of key reference point for some of the ideas within the art and the way it's expressed, the way some of these, I'd say retro-futuristic art style is probably the best description, and the artist captured it really well. And that's for the sort of the main gameplay. And we always knew that there was going to be sort of bone skeleton animation. So we used Spine 2D to do all the character animations. It wasn't going to be frame by frame. So, you know, working within those constraints or within that structure, obviously the artists had to design the characters in a way that worked for that. And they did a great job. And then the cutscene animation, which is it's you know, video, like pre-rendered video. It's completely different, and that sort of that comic style motion graphic art that's it's just something that the artists brought, and it was unique and very stylistic. And
so what were some of the challenges that you and the team faced while making this game and making a point and click adventure game?
One of the challenges is that there is quite a stigma attached to point and click adventure games. It's, you know, it's viewed as sort of an old, outdated genre. But you know, there's some things to look at what old games did wrong, and basically don't repeat those mistakes. Things like, you know, pixel hunting and illogical puzzles that just frustrate players. So, you know, those were the main considerations around it being a point and click game.
When making the puzzles you mentioned there, how did you design it to make sure it wasn't too difficult or too easy for the audience?
Testing. Yeah, a lot of testing and feedback from others. That was really important. Early on in the development, we basically had developed a sort of a prototype, like one of the larger scenes in the game, and tried to get that up to a certain standard. And so that we worked on that, our vertical slice, and we found, you know, we designed the puzzles, and when you're designing it, you know what to do, obviously, because you created it, and what seems easy can be quite difficult, and what you might think is difficult is actually quite straightforward. So, you know, after taking that to others, whether it was at PAX in 2018, that was great, or actually getting proper user testing done, that was the key. I mean, we saw what worked and what didn't work, and just modified the puzzles based on that, and got a good sense and gauged where we needed to sort of be at.
So the game came out earlier this month. What's the reception been like so far?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm quite happy with the way that people, that various reviewers and you know, the feedback that we've received has been quite positive, which is great. It's sort of, you know, quite proud of what we have achieved, and hopefully more people get to download and play the game. And
have you got any responses that you didn't expect?
Not really, to be honest. Any criticisms that I've seen so far, I sort of was expecting them. I mean, some of them were based around sort of issues with the genre itself, and they acknowledged that. That it was an issue with the mechanics or with the genre, and you know, that's expected. I think that it is a niche genre, and you either like it or you don't, I think, for whatever reasons. And you know, any other things that have come up, maybe some little bugs or things like that, that was also, maybe that particular bug wasn't expected, but you know, I was expecting something, so something to come up. So yeah, pretty happy with the responses.
So we've been talking a bit about the game Henry Moss and the Wormhole Conspiracy, but let's talk a little bit more about you. What made you want to get into game development?
I've come from a film and media background, and an IT background as well, which is sort of quite diverse, and I have always been, you know, really interested in stories, in storytelling. And so it sort of felt like a great way of engaging people to bring those different aspects together, to bring sort of my experience in IT and programming into it, to bring elements of film and writing into it. And that's sort of, I've always just been passionate about games and about storytelling. So it just seemed like a great fit and a great project to work on.
So how did you go from that those different aspects to being with Bad Goat Studios?
It sort of started as an idea for this game. I mean, this is the first game that Bad Goat's done. And so I'd say Bad Goat sort of came out of this game more than the other way around. So, yeah, it sort of started as an idea, like all these things begin, and then getting in touch with the artists probably was the first sort of collaboration work that happened really, really early on. And things just evolved from that and the game developed. And then we have to, you know, put it into some sort of studio structure. So Bad Goat came out of that, and that's sort of how it's developed. Yeah.
So you mentioned before some of the artists working on the game were based in Malaysia. How do you go about working so far apart from each other on one project?
Basically, software and tools is the key, and being able to manage those tools well and check in regularly. I mean, part of the challenge is obviously proximity and its time zone as well, and being able to, I mean, in some cases the overlap was very short, unless, you know, I was up in the middle of the night or something like that. But yeah, we used Slack a lot for our communication.
How do you sort out things like creative differences on the project?
The design team, mainly Felix Strangio and myself, overlapped a lot in our roles. But other than that, you know, the artists, they're the experts at the art. So, you know, they'll obviously there's direction that I bring and that Felix brings. But at the end of the day, you know, listening to the artists and allowing their creative output to shine, that was the key, really. Allowing everyone to do, just to have a lot of input into the creation of the game. Yeah, a designer in at least with this game, there was a lot of overlapping roles, like, as I said before, director, producer, designer. But the design part of it really brings together finds a way to make the mechanics of the game fit within the story, with the writing, in a way that works really well to achieve the goals that we're trying to achieve.
Do you have any tips for not getting too burnt out or overwhelmed with work?
I mean, it's easier said than done, but really making an effort to have a balanced lifestyle when it comes to work. And it's difficult. I mean, it depends on the game. It depends on the team. Planning. What did we use at one stage? Before we used Trello, we used Asana, I think, to plan out, but mainly Trello to sort of schedule out what was to happen and when it, you know, where the milestones were, where the deadlines were. And look, it changed a lot as we sort of, you know, worked out how long things took and what was required. But yeah, it's hard to know. It's definitely an art knowing what is realistic in terms of a timeline. And if you set your expectations too high in too short a time, I think burning out is inevitable. We had the fortune of not being really bound by any specific deadline so much. And I didn't want to. I mean, towards the end or later in the project, we definitely set more stricter deadlines so we could, you know, get things done and ticked off. But especially in that early phase, and even sort of middle phase, just allowing the project to flow without being too pressured, if you can, would be ideal and would hopefully avoid you getting overworked or burnt out.
Did the development process change from being a bit more free flow to having a deadline, like toward the end?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, sort of just in line with how we ramped up production from the very beginning when it was just, the inception of the game. It was all very sideline project sort of ideas, concepts, early writing. And yeah, just as the game was evolving and more people got involved in the within the team and collaborated, it just sort of naturally got more structured and needed to, obviously, to get more structured and managed. And
what advice would you give to new game designers or even people wanting to get into game designs? What sort of advice or hints and tips would you give them starting out?
Besides learning as much as you can and building your skill set, I think meeting other people in the industry or other people who want to be in the industry and building a network, if you can, in your local area is key to sort of staying motivated and being engaged.
Well, that's all about that we have time for tonight. But if you do want to find out more about the game, Henry Moss and the Wormhole Conspiracy, you can head to mossadventure.com, or if you search on Twitter and Facebook at Moss Adventure, you can check out everything going on there. Thanks for being part of the show today, Ezra.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Pixel Sifts is produced by Scott Quigg, Sarah Ireland, myself, Mitch Lowe, Daniel Ang, Adam Christo, and Gianni Di Giovanni is our executive producer. And as always, we'll be putting links to everything we talked about in the show notes on our website, pixelsift.com.au.
You can also come join us on Discord. We'd love to have you there. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord, where you can share your creative work, talk about topics and games and anything else. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord. And if you'd like what we do, can we ask a favor? And we need your help to share the show. So tell a friend, subscribe your brothers and sisters, start someone's journey into podcasts, because we know that getting started is tricky, but once you're in, you'll love it too much to leave.
Next week on the 25th of February, we'll be back with Pixel Sift Plays. I think we're continuing with Elden next week, playing one of the many indie games. But that's all for this week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.